It was the height of the racing season in Saratoga. The thermometer stood over 90, and a haze of sun-powdered dust hung in the elms along the street facing the Grand Union Hotel, and over the scant triangular lawns planted with young firs and protected by a low white rail from the depredations of dogs and children. Mrs. St. George, whose husband was one of the gentlemen most interested in the racing, sat on the wide hotel veranda, a jug of iced lemonade at her elbow and a palmetto fan in one small hand, and looked out between the immensely tall white columns of the portico, which so often reminded cultured travelers of the Parthenon at Athens, Greece. On Sunday afternoons, this veranda was crowded with gentlemen in tall hats and frock coats, enjoying cool drinks and Havana cigars, and surveying the long country street planted with spindling elms. But today, the gentlemen were racing, and the rows of chairs were occupied by ladies and young girls listlessly waiting their return in a drowsy atmosphere of suede fans and iced refreshments. Mrs. St. George eyed most of these ladies with a melancholy disfavor and sighed to think how times had changed since she had first, some 10 years earlier, trailed her crinolined skirts up and down that same veranda. Mrs. St. George's vacant hours, which were many, were filled by such wistful reflections. Life had never been easy, but it had certainly been easier when Colonel St. George devoted less time to poker and to Wall Street. When the children were little, crinolines were still worn, and Newport had not yet eclipsed all rival watering places. What, for instance, could be prettier or more suitable for a lady than a black alpaca skirt looped up like a window drapery above a scarlet serge underskirt, the whole surmounted by a wide-sleeved black poplin jacket with ruffled muslin undersleeves and a flat pork pie hat like the one the Empress Eugenie was represented as wearing on the beach at Biarritz. But now there seemed to be no definite fashions. Everybody wore what they pleased, and it was as difficult to look like a lady in those tight, perpendicular polonaises bunched up at the back that the Paris dressmakers were sending over, as in the outrageously low, square-cut evening gowns which Mrs. St. George had viewed with disapproval at the opera in New York. The fact was, you could hardly tell a lady now from an actress, or the other kind of woman. And society at Saratoga, now that all the best people were going to Newport, had grown as mixed and confusing as the fashions. Everything was changed since crinolines had gone out and bustles come in. Who, for instance, was that new woman, a Mrs. Clausen, or some such name, who had such a dusky skin for her auburn hair, such a fat body for her small, uncertain feet, and who, when she wasn't strumming on the hotel piano, was credibly reported by the domestics to lie for hours on her bedroom sofa smoking, yes, smoking, big Havana cigars. The gentleman, Mrs. St. George believed, treated the story as a good joke. To a woman of refinement, it could be only a subject for painful meditation. Mrs. St. George had always been rather distant in her manner to the big and exuberant Mrs. Elmsworth, who was seated at this moment nearby on the veranda. Mrs. Elmsworth was always edging up. Mrs. St. George was instinctively distrustful of the advantages of ladies who had daughters of the age of her own, and Lizzie Elmsworth, the eldest of her neighbor's family, was just about the age of Virginia St. George, and might by some, those who preferred the brunette to the very blonde type, be thought as handsome. And besides, where did the Elmsworths come from, as Mrs. St. George had often asked her husband, an irreverent, jovial man who invariably replied, "If you were to begin by telling me where we do..." So absurd on the part of a gentleman as well known as Colonel St. George in some unspecified district of what Mrs. St. George called the South.